The death of Pierre Charles L'Enfant in 1825 was barely noticed. Just one paragraph in the National Intelliger obituary section about the architect who was responsible for designing Washington, D.C. Although he was born in France, L'Enfant is certainly a significant figure in American history, and yet his story has been largely neglected. In Grand Avenues, the story of the French visionary who designed Washington, D.C., Scott W. Berg finally gives him his due. It's published by Pantheon Books, and I'm very pleased it has brought Scott Berg to my show today. Hello.
Hello. It's a pleasure to be here.
What interested you most in the story, L'Enfant's character or the story of the design of Washington?
Well, I have an undergraduate degree in architecture, and this is in the middle 80s, and I had taken an urban planning course, and I had spent about... They had spent about a week on this story, and this was back in Minnesota, where I'm from. And when I eventually moved out to Washington, D.C., it was great to sort of know this little extra bit about the city. I began to write for the Washington Post and got the chance to do an article about L'Enfant and began to get into the research about his design of the city and his character, and did enough research for one 3,000-word article to fill a book, and discovered there was so much more to this story than I'd ever imagined, and so it was sort of a natural progression to, you know, go ahead and write the book.
He was a difficult man.
He was a very difficult man. He was raised in a system in Paris as a student at the Royal Academy of Painting and Sculpture in which artists would value patronage above payment, meaning that having your name associated with the court of a king was the most important thing, and led you to sort of believe that everything you did was a personal relationship with a person of great power, and that gave you great power. And that was what sort of happened in the Federal City Project, is that he believed that George Washington was his patron, and that gave him a certain power that allowed him to dictate terms to just about anybody else. But that's not the way it worked in late 18th century America.
You said you found enough material to fill a book. So this is not a hidden story. It's just one that people haven't been paying much attention to, except perhaps in architecture classes in Minnesota.
It is interesting. If you read histories of this era, the Federalist era and the sort of late Revolutionary era, and you look in the back of the book and you look in the index, you're going to see no entry for L'Enfant, or maybe a page or two. You look in architectural histories of America and even world histories of urban planning, you're going to find a chapter on L'Enfant. You might find, you know, 40 pages on him. And so, yeah, it's a story that the architectural historians have paid a lot of attention to, but other people not so much, although there is a small but sort of devoted scholarly group doing that.
But he wasn't an architect. He was trained as a painter, wasn't he?
He became an architect. At the Royal Academy of Painting and Sculpture, he was trained as what they would have called an artist.
In France.
This was in Paris, right. He would have, it wouldn't have been so much that he was trained, say, as a painter, as he would have studied optics. He would have studied geometry. He would have studied proportion. Principles that apply to as much in a way to urban planning as they would to anything else. But no, he was not trained as an architect or engineer. He was trained as an artist. He became one when he came to America eventually.
Well, the lines were a lot more fluid in those days. Michelangelo designed any number of buildings.
Oh, absolutely. And
he wasn't really a trained architect.
No, and in fact, in New York in 1789, when L'Enfant renovates City Hall to become Federal Hall here in New York City, the first Capitol building of the United States, if you look in the city directory of that day, there was nobody called an architect. He would have been called builder or construction or something.
And that building still exists?
Not in the form. The building that L'Enfant renovated, the renovation he undertook, that was eventually destroyed fairly shortly thereafter, very early in the 19th century. What you see today is a later project. But it's in the same spot down there on Wall Street. And so you can sort of, and the street arrangement is largely the same, more or less. So you can sort of put yourself back in that history there, at least.
He left France and came here with Lafayette as his military engineer.
Lafayette and L'Enfant came at roughly the same time. They came on different ships and sort of for different purposes. L'Enfant came as the junior most member of an engineering team. He wasn't trained as an engineer. L'Enfant's father, also named Pierre L'Enfant without the Charles, L'Enfant's father was a minor court painter for Louis XV, a painter of battle scenes, which required that he understood engineering. And he was actually his son's tutor at the Royal Academy of Painting and Sculpture. So he comes over having sort of been attached to this group of engineers, probably through a connection having to do with his father. How exactly that happened, we don't know. So when he comes over here, he and Lafayette are in terms of social standing and the sort of scale of wealth are just miles apart. They eventually do know each other. They never become friends. But when L'Enfant comes over, he's very much sort of the runt of the litter. And for him to do what he did in America is really a very remarkable thing.
Did he paint while he was in the military?
He did, and there's, in fact, speaking of Lafayette, there's a letter that George Washington writes to Lafayette shortly after Valley Forge, where he talks about Lafayette's request to have L'Enfant paint a portrait of Washington, a portrait that was apparently created, although it doesn't survive. And George Washington sort of complaining to Lafayette, saying, I thought that this man was just going to sketch my features. Had I known you wanted a painting, I would have asked Mr. Peel to do it. So there's this painting that L'Enfant did that apparently doesn't exist, although it may be in a home somewhere that we don't know about. But so he had that early connection with Washington at Valley Forge, and L'Enfant was at Valley Forge, again, as a sort of a junior member of the French volunteers.
But he eventually is promoted to major. That's a pretty high office.
It is a high office. It took L'Enfant longer to get to major than many of the other French volunteers who came over. There wasn't a large group of them, and they tended to get promoted fairly quickly. But L'Enfant at the Siege of Savannah is actually wounded. He rushes forward to try to set fire to some of the British defenses at the Siege of Savannah, and he's shot point blank in the leg. And there was some concern they wouldn't take him out of the ditch, that they would leave him here, that he was dead. He eventually recovers from that, and part of his promotion to major has as much to do with sort of having taken that wound and having shown that valor in the American cause.
How aware was he of what was going on in this country? Would he have noticed the kinds of buildings that were around? The prevalent style then was still Georgian, wasn't it?
Yeah, and in fact, Federal Hall here in New York City becomes one of the very early examples of what you would call the federal style. There's no doubt that he was very much aware of building styles. And then there's no doubt that he was very much aware of how cities were put together. Now, in America, when he came over, most cities were put together on a very sort of rudimentary grid plan. But there's no doubt that he paid attention to those things, and that he was, in fact, paying attention as a young man in Paris before he left to those things. It's not as if he came over and picked up, you know, what he needed to know. I mean, he had an eye for this kind of thing all along.
Is that what persuaded Washington to appoint him as the designer of the new capital?
It's what led Washington to appoint him the designer of both the new Capitol building, Federal Hall in New York City, and Washington didn't directly appoint him for that. Probably Alexander Hamilton was more involved in that. But it was his success at that, and previous conversations the two had probably had. They seemed to be unrecorded, but there's quite a bit of evidence that he and Washington had talked about cities and city planning before. He had done several other things. He had planned sort of gala parties in the wake of the revolution's success. He was very well known as someone who could stage a big event. The parade in New York City to ratify the Constitution that sort of came down Broadway when that was still an open question. That parade was outfitted by L'Enfant, for instance. He was somebody who was known to be, he could put on a pageant, he could design you a building, he could do all these kind of things. He was sort of a jack of all trades.
But designing a city.
Well, and the story there is that they don't ask him to design a city. The story there is that when he arrives in March of 1791 into the little town of Georgetown, next to the territory that they're thinking about for the federal city, or that they had designated as the District of Columbia, when he comes down, all they've asked him to do is to choose a couple of good spots for the, as they called it, President's House and Congress House. And they say, Washington will be here in 2 weeks and tell him what you found. Washington shows up in 2 weeks and L'Enfant says, well, I found you a couple of good spots for the Congress House and the President's House, but I also have an idea about how this could look as a city. And it's to Washington's credit, George Washington's credit, that he doesn't say, you know, no, that's not what we asked you to do. He says, all right, tell me more. You have 2 more months to come up with a fuller plan. And L'Enfant does. And then he says, you have 2 more months to come up with a fully realized, detailed plan. And L'Enfant does that, meaning 5 months from starting, he's come up with a plan of the core of D.C., which is a world record for urban planners.
But inspired largely by Paris, isn't it?
Inspired by Paris, certainly certain parts of Paris. Certainly there's a lot in the plan of Washington that suggests sort of the region beside the Louvre, or the region sort of near the Louvre that includes the Tuileries Gardens and the Champs-Élysées, there's a lot of evidence that that's there. But there's also a lot of evidence that he would have looked at plans of Rome and plans, unrealized plans for London in the wake of the fire of 1666. Christopher Wren, the famous architect, comes up with a plan for London that looks not so different from portions of D.C., and there's a lot of possible places this plan came from.
Well, it does have grand avenues like Paris, and then it has
absolutely.
It has all of these squares,
yes.
Which are again like Paris, where streets converge, and you have and it really works well for Washington.
Yes,
my guess is Scott W. Berg, who's written a book called Grand Avenues: The Story of the French Visionary Who Designed Washington D.C., published by Pantheon. Do you think that his being French might have helped in a way, suggesting a break with British tradition and paying tribute to the French contribution to the Revolution?
That's a really good question. It certainly didn't hurt that at the moment sort of he comes to George Washington's notice as sort of the apex of the French-American relationship. In other words, he's part of a team that really was helping to, despite some of them being a bit fractious, was helping to win the war. And sort of he comes into Washington's consciousness sort of at Valley Forge that way. It may have also contributed to some of the problems he had later, because, of course, he had a temperament that was at the time considered very French. In 18th century America, Stoicism was already considered a virtue, and civility. And he, one thing L'Enfant wasn't was Stoic, and neither was he civil all the time.
Do you think the ambiguous nature of his sex life may have played a part in the way he was perceived at the time?
That's a question that's almost impossible to answer. There are several people who sort of advance the theory that he may have been homosexual. There are people who
had a longtime companion.
Yeah. He had a longtime companion. Many people had longtime companions, not only in the 18th century, but the 19th century. I think of Lincoln, wherever he went, was sleeping in the same, you know, bed with men. James Madison slept in the same bed with another man for a while. It's very hard to apply sort of today's standards of what that meant, but it is very true that he was what they would have called a confirmed bachelor back then. It's hard to say what some people call a flamboyance is a word that was used, but people use that word about the French quite a bit as well. So it's hard to sort of make that determination from our viewpoint in the 21st century.
You suggest also that it wasn't easy to collaborate with this man.
No.
And a project on this scale would require quite a bit of collaboration.
Yes, it wasn't easy to collaborate with him at all. It was apparently fairly easy to work for him. Apparently he treated the workers under him very well. Apparently he demanded sort of ample rations for them and alcohol and chocolate for his workers. He was apparently sort of well-liked in that regard. But he viewed himself as reporting directly to George Washington with no sort of along one line, Washington to L'Enfant, with nobody else in the picture.
So what did he do beyond laying out the city, which is considerable?
What he did beyond laying out the city, do you mean in the...
Did he design any of the buildings?
He was engaged to design the Congress House and the President's House. And there's one source of friction that as he was doing this sort of frantic riding around the site and trying to finish out the city plan and get all the streets in place, it was one source of friction that sort of his plans for the President's House and the Congress House kept getting sort of pushed off. John Trumbull, the well-known American artist, is one of the few people to sort of in writing record his look at L'Enfant's preliminary sketches for those, and he talks about the idea of a circular sort of central chamber and a dome having originated with L'Enfant, but that's it. I mean, we don't know. Those plans are gone. Those sketches that he did are gone. But originally you had a man here who was going to design not only the Federal City, but its two most important buildings.
Who was responsible for his downfall, George Washington, or was it Thomas Jefferson, who had his own ideas about architecture?
Yeah, and cities. Thomas Jefferson had his own ideas about cities, that they should be small hamlets and not large sort of metropolises. The person responsible for L'Enfant's downfall, in all fairness, was L'Enfant. I mean, he was asked to get along with Washington's commissioners, three men who were very good friends of George Washington's, who were responsible for sort of the money half of the equation. Their idea of paying for Capital City was that you sold a few lots and you used that money to do a little construction, then you sold a few more lots. L'Enfant's idea to fund the federal city was to take a $1 million loan from somebody, build all the streets first. What we, a very common idea today, what we call infrastructure, put in the highways, put in the roads, put in that, the parks first, and then the money will appear. The commissioners didn't agree with that, and L'Enfant would not put himself in any relationship to the commissioners other than as their superior. And that's what really leads to his dismissal.
But you'd think that he'd want to go back home to France after that. He's often known as Peter rather than Pierre, so he... I guess he made a major commitment to America anyway.
He made a major commitment to America. I mean, he anglicizes his name to Peter almost upon arrival, and every legal document that you can find involving L'Enfant uses the name Peter and not Pierre. He preferred to be called Major L'Enfant above everything. But he stays in America after sort of his unfortunate end on the Federal City Project. And there's a sense, at least in my reading of the research, and there's a sense that had he lasted on the Federal City Project, had he been given the control he wanted, had that city begun to grow and sort of emerge the way he wanted, one gets a sense he would have eventually gone back to France, and had the French Revolution not occurred, shown up at the king's doorstep and said, "I'm a famous man now, can I do work for you?" But all those things sort of conspire to keep him in America. And he runs out of money, too. He never took a salary. Sort of modeling himself after George Washington that way, who didn't take a salary as commander-in-chief, didn't take a salary, was working for glory. Well, when the glory didn't appear, the money wasn't there either. And that may have also limited his movement quite a bit.
So how did he survive those later years?
He was a charity case. He found his way into, through a sort of an involved set of circumstances, he finds his way into the care of a man named Thomas Diggs, who was a really remarkable character and worth a book of his own, who was the first American novelist, wrote a book called Adventures of Alonzo, who owned the land on which a fort along the Potomac called Fort Washington sat. He's a charity case. He spends nearly a decade there, and then when Thomas Diggs dies, his nephew, William Dudley Diggs, takes L'Enfant in on an estate in Prince George's County just north of the district, and that's where he dies, and nearly penniless. He's put into a grave on the property, a grave near the graves of the servants and slaves on that property, and then 75 years, at least, he lies are basically forgotten, not hardly known as the designer of the federal city.
And yet, pretty much the plan that he came up with is the plan that was employed.
Exactly.
He's fired, but they still follow his plan.
They follow his plan for the core of the city. And when the city is sort of searching for reinvigoration under Teddy Roosevelt in 1900, they go back to L'Enfant's plan, and that's why the mall looks the way it does today.
Scott W. Berg's book, Grand Avenues, the story of the French visionary who designed Washington, D.C., is published by Pantheon. Thank you so much for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me.